G'day everyone, and welcome to Talking Leadership. This is Eric Perez, welcoming you back to the new series of the podcast looking at leadership from an international global perspective. And today I have the great chance to speak to someone who works in the technology space. So he is an intrapreneur for Ericsson One and is the founder of RadioSense. Can I welcome to the podcast Armin Katovic? How are you, Armin?
Very good, Eric. Thanks for having me, mate.
Mate, appreciate you coming on board. Now, I did not know that the term intrapreneur existed. So before we get into some of the themes of the podcast, can you give me, not me, can you give my listeners a bit of a sense of the difference between an intrapreneur and an entrepreneur from your perspective, mate?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's also been a new term for me as well. So I've also come across it fairly recently, basically last year. Functionally, what an intrapreneur does is identical to what an entrepreneur does. So there's really no difference there. The main difference lies is in terms of your limits, limitations and constraints, and in terms of ownership of your idea and business. That's the main difference. So as an intrapreneur, you work within a large corporation. As an entrepreneur there, another term for intrapreneur is a corporate entrepreneur. So everything you do within this large corporation, in my case, it's Ericsson, it's identical to what an entrepreneur would do, you know, finding out a gap in the market, developing that idea, getting funding for it, getting the customers, getting the business and marketing, you know, identical to what an entrepreneur would do. But it's basically the idea and the business is owned by your parent company. And in terms of like how you approach things, you are also limited by, you know, that company's policies, core values, principles, etc. You know, you don't have a kind of a, you can't just do completely freestyle. You have to be working within a certain corporate boundaries there. So that's the difference essentially.
So from what you've learned, I just want to unpack this a little bit, if you'll indulge me. How mm-hmm. common is an intrapreneur, a corporate entrepreneur in the world of work? Mm-hmm. Is it typical in your industry sector, or is it something that's becoming more common across big business?
I think it's actually becoming very, very common. So most of the large IT companies, and you were right in the beginning, it is, you can you know, say it's an IT tech company that I'm working in. It's becoming you know, very popular. A lot of large companies here in Sweden, like Spotify, for example, have that. Google has it, Facebook has it. In Ericsson, it's becoming very big. So what's happened in Ericsson, for example, the incubator, we can say, it's an organization that kind of hosts and supports this entrepreneurship. It's called Ericsson One. And initially, the focus was actually on bringing external startups and external kind of founders into the company, bringing them in. And this, I've seen this actually across a lot of other companies in the US as well, very large companies like AT&T, for example. But what's happened over time is that Ericsson has realized that there are, you know, being a large company with 90,000 employees around the world and, you know, lots of IP, they've realized that, well, we actually have a very large talent pool here. So why not tap internally into it? Because it is probably an easier path, because the people that are working here are tightly connected to this industry, the telecom industry in this case, versus, for example, bringing someone from the outside that has typically worked in finance and trying to integrate them into this sector. So it is much, much, much easier. So that's where the focus has been in the last couple of years. And I'm seeing more of that happening as well. But there's definitely a ramp up. It's getting more and more popular to do this sort of thing.
I'll start where I typically start with this is by asking your pathway to becoming an entrepreneur. What did that look like, and why that versus any other mode of work for you? Why become an entrepreneur?
I mean, I've been basically innovating or developing things on the side pretty much my whole professional life. So, you know, I was very lucky when I joined Ericsson 2008 in Melbourne, in Australia. So I actually joined your brother's team, and I was very lucky to have people like him who were, you know, I saw as like role models. I mean, guys were very smart and very innovative people. And, you know, even though they had a kind of a day-to-day job in supporting our customers and, you know, making the operations very smooth for them, they were always developing something on the side to assist them. And some of those tools and you know, products actually became proper products that were used within Ericsson, either sort of internally, like within internal R&D and support, or even externally, like actually selling it or deploying it to our customers. So I was really inspired by that, and I basically, pretty much in all my time in Ericsson, I've been doing something like that on the side. Some of the tools that I developed are now, have teams, consultants working with them, like full time even. So I decided to, okay, how about I actually take a bigger plunge and try to actually, just make a tool or something that can, just focused on from a technical standpoint, but actually have a complete end-to-end, like a business view of it. So something that could actually spin off to become not just some kind of a tool in a portfolio, but actually become a completely new business within the company. And, I was toying with some ideas both outside of Ericsson, just doing something on my own, and some ideas that I was doing inside. And this one that I'm running now inside of the company as this entrepreneur, that was the thing that took off, basically. And that's what I'm focusing on now.
In that sense, you're the first in that role with Ericsson?
No, there have been a few before me. So not a lot, but there have been a couple of companies that have sort of spun up from Ericsson. And right now I am in a, what we call incubation phase, which is basically I'm building a minimal viable product, an MVP, and I have some what we call early adopters, so customers in UK and here in Sweden as well that are working with me to sort of evaluate how the solution would be beneficial for them. So at this stage, there are maybe half a dozen of us around the world that are running at this incubation phase, but couple of companies that have actually managed to sort of scale up. And so we the way we sort of phrase it, we have different phases. You have ideation phase, you have incubation phase, and then you have industrialization phase. So industrialization is really where you spin off and you actually become either a separate entity, which is very rare. That's quite rare. Most often it's more like you are, some company by Ericsson, for example. So there's only been a few of those. And right now I'm trying to get there, basically. So that's my goal.
Oh, wow. Okay. With a view to then starting again and looking for another idea or becoming the head of that spin-off business underwritten by
So exactly. So, I mean, there are different approaches you can take. I mean, you can get it to the stage where, right, this is, let's say for the MVP, prove that this is definitely commercially viable. It's feasible. It's achievable. The customers want it. They want to pay for it. And then we want to actually turn this into a proper sort of business or a sub business. At that stage, then I can sort of decide if I want to sort of stay on and be kind of the CEO of this new business or whatever role I want to define for myself. It might be that I prefer to be like a founder and a CTO, let's say, so I can focus more on the technological side of things. And then we get someone else to act as a CEO. Or I can just basically, hand it over and say, right, this is going to, looking promising. People want to pay for this. Everything is set up. The product is ready to go. So, take it away and, go back to what I was doing before or start with a new idea. So it's, completely up to me, basically. There are different pathways that I can take. Right now, I mean, I would be more focused or more inclined to go towards actually running this as a business. So I would want to sort of stay on as a founder and see it all the way through. But we'll see how we go.
From someone who doesn't work in your world, I think to me that sounds incredibly interesting and would keep you motivated to keep doing that kind of work because of the freedom that would go with that. So that's excellent, mate. Mm. So let me ask the next question and I'm very interested to get your perspective on this. In your travels, do you see a difference between the leaders you've encountered and entrepreneurs? Are they one and the same? Do you see a distinction between the two?
Between a leader and an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been asked before questions about, leadership and am I a leader and et such. And I mean, I have a kind of a trouble sort of really defining what a leader is. It's not something like if someone would ask me, am I a leader? I would probably say no. It's a bit like, are you funny? Yeah, I'm funny. It's something that it's like an attribute that you kind of have to earn and that others would sort of assign to you as based on what you, the actions that you take and your behaviors, right?
One thing that I find extremely interesting about that response is I've had that with a lot of the entrepreneurs that I've spoken with, and
okay.
Look, some people will say what's in a distinction between the two. For me, it's just to try and unpack it a little bit. But hearing what you said about what you do in your role, it kind of screams to me leadership in a technical realm. Do you see a difference or not really?
There's probably an overlap. I mean, for example, some of the technical guys that I've considered role models throughout my career, I mean, I never saw them really as entrepreneurs, but I saw them as leaders, for example, in just the way they were able to, take a team, take a group of people and just make them better. You know, they had a lot of competence, and just their style of how they dealt with problems and how they found solutions in a group, for example, that was to me like leadership. Like, these guys are, definitely leaders, but not entrepreneurs. It's not, I didn't really see anything in there that was like, this guy could become, the next Elon Musk, right? I've seen like leaders, in a lot of different places. There's definitely a difference, but there's obviously an overlap as well.
What do you find the most difficult part about being an entrepreneur, Armin?
Well, within the kind of scope of of my current work, so within the company, within Ericsson, I mean, it's sort of, you have these kind of boundaries, limitations, which are there. So, for example, almost all ideas that we want to develop have some reliance on the data that's coming from the networks, from mobile networks, for example, 4G and 5G networks. And so the limitation there being that this data is not, for example, owned by us, by Ericsson. It's owned by the telecom operators like Telstra, like AT&T, etc. You have to figure out a way to, build up this idea that it's lucrative to the operators that will work with you, even though you're using their data, basically. I mean, it's a bit like, they own it already. So finding out ways to maneuver this space, that is a bit of a challenge. So I haven't had, at least in this early stage, I haven't had too many issues because the concept I'm working on right now is, very, very interesting. So, I mean, what I'm working with now is trying to estimate or trying to determine what's happening in the environment by using radio towers, for example. So one of the primary use cases is like trying to determine how many cars there are on the road. So without actually having to install any additional sensors or cameras, I'm just using the antennas that are on top of the building already. So, when I kind of package that and sell it to them, like, well, you basically get a sensors for free, essentially. So it's almost no cost to actually sensing or estimating how much traffic there is on the road, which could be useful by all kinds of different entities, like Quick Roads, maybe in Victoria, or different cities, maybe City of Brisbane, etc. But when you actually then start to get into the nitty-gritty and the money aspects, that's when I think the some of the aspects get a bit more complicated there. So things like that, also related to other aspects, like right now, if you're an entrepreneur doing this by yourself, you could go out and, let's say, you have a friend that's you think is really, really good, like he's going to be a super sales guy, let's say. You can just hire him, right? But within my kind of context as an entrepreneur within Ericsson, you have to kind of follow certain rules. So you can only hire people from certain suppliers, or internally. You're sort of working with these boundaries, and you have to find ways to maneuver. You have a limited budget as well. You've only given a small amount of money by the investors internally, and you have to use that wisely. And maybe the people from the outside are cheaper than the people from the inside, for example. But that's what you are sort of bounded by. So, there are a lot of challenges actually. It's just a matter of trying to maneuver through them, basically.
Measures of success. How do you measure success in what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah. So right now we're going through like different kind of little mini phases, and the first phase with our early adopters in UK has been very positive. So the first success is, first of all, like technical or technical proof that this is going to work, and it's going to work really well and better than the competition, for example. And, you know, I don't like to just market something and try to sell it before really getting kind of a empirical or, you know, scientific proof that this is working really well, you know. So that was, for me, that was like the first, absolute first, like toll gate, is that we need to, you know, really verify that this is working as it should or better. So that looks very promising so far. So that to me is like a first little mini success. The second success would be, of course, to get a more kind of a wider or a bigger scale agreement with someone to say, yes, we would like to use this. We'd like to deploy this, let's say, across UK. So that will be quite a big milestone for me and a success. And I can then use that as a springboard to go to other markets as well, to other countries. Another success is kind of the way of working within the team. And now it's been a very, you know, a big challenge because of this COVID-19. So everyone in Sweden, like basically half the workforce is working from home, the entire Ericsson. So I've got my 8,500 colleagues here in Stockholm. They're all working from home. You know, it's not ideal, particularly when it's like a small, when you kind of, you want to do this in a small amount of time, as quickly as possible, and, you know, get results as quickly as possible. So typically you would, you know, sit together in a room, you all know each other, you don't have to have so much overhead or governance in terms of how you work, you know, you can just look over each other's shoulder and you know, and just talk basically, right? So I try to emulate that remotely. So we use Microsoft Teams, and we basically have daily kind of, I call them live data science sessions, where me and my technical guys, the data scientists, we sit and we share the screen, and we basically look at each other's code, look at how things are running, provide input, rerun it, look at the results. Then we have weekly syncs with my project manager, where we kind of look at where we are. Are we falling behind? Do we need to define more tasks? And so this has been a success for me. It's been working really well. Everything's been gelling. It's been very fluid. So that's also a success, that everyone is happy and everyone is, you know, working as well as they could. Everyone is motivated. So that's definitely a big success for me as well. So hopefully this continues.
Entrepreneur capabilities. Do you, from your travels, is there a set of capabilities that are critical for entrepreneurial success?
Yeah, I think being able to adapt and learn very quickly, I think that's like crucial. I've met actually a lot of people, like internally at least, like the intrapreneurs who are more coming from a kind of a sales background. So they're more working with sales and commercial aspects, and they don't have a lot of technical know-how. Having at least the ability to learn the technical aspects is, I think, critical. So just focusing on commercial or just focusing on technical, I think is probably not a recipe for success. So you need to be able to have a kind of a full spectrum. So right now, I mean, I've been a technical guy basically all my life. So now I'm having to kind of really ramp up very quickly on the commercial aspects. So I'm looking at marketing and marketing plans and marketing strategies, business models, trademarks, IPR, legal issues, privacy issues, basically everything, you know. So being able to adapt to that and just learn very, very quickly and get a hang of it is, I think, really crucial. So not being buried just in your little kind of area, but actually having a complete end-to-end view of the product and of the business, sort of learning where, you know, where you lacked before, very quickly. That's, I think, absolutely critical.
So I just wanted to get your perspective on a couple of statements in relation to entrepreneurs. And the first one being, just to get your perspective on this, entrepreneurs are risk takers.
Yes, I agree. Although as an intrapreneur, you take, the risk is minimized. And that was actually one of the advantages. So you give up your, you know, your ownership of the business. Essentially, you do get some, I hope, some financial reward, you know, in the future. But you give up the sort of ownership. But you also don't have any risk. So you can actually this can fail miserably. So what? You know, you just go back to what you were doing before. It's no problem. As an entrepreneur, when you're doing it yourself, you do take a huge risk. I mean, this, you put everything on the line, right? You have to go and get the funding, and then you, if this doesn't fly, you know, you're back to nothing. So, and you have to start again from scratch. Pick yourself up and, you know, get back.
And I appreciate the compare and contrast of the two. That's quite good. Okay, entrepreneurs are persistent.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I see it like in myself that even though you, I'm trying not to like attach myself completely to this, that I get sort of offended if someone says something negative, you know, you're still trying to keep a distance from it and kind of be fairly objective to the you know, idea and take, you know, different types of input. I see that I'm kind of persistent, like, you know, just kind of subconsciously, I want to keep on pushing and, you know, extending the boundaries. So, and yeah, I think you have to persevere, basically.
Okay. And very much linked to that, do you believe entrepreneurs are innovators?
Innovators?
Mm.
I certainly hope they are. Yeah, they should be. You have to innovate in some way. It doesn't have to be a brand new product or a completely brand new solution, something completely out of the blue. I mean, if we look at all the big kind of tech companies today, like Google, Facebook, all of those things existed before. When Google came out, there was Yahoo, there was Alta Vista, there were search engines. Google just had a different algorithm, which was, you know, better than all the other algorithms. And then they used that as a springboard to expand into all kinds of things, right? Facebook as well, like there was MySpace and LiveJournal and MSN Spaces, and you know, you probably remember them. You know, they had a like button, you know, and the streaming services that I listened to before, like SoundCloud and Grooveshark, but they just had a better solution to, you know, with the record companies. And so the point is that every single one of them innovated in some way. So you must. There's just no way of succeeding without actually some kind of innovation. It could be in how you establish contracts. It could be in how you set up your user interface, your usability. But you have to innovate. And I don't really see. I think they are so tightly coupled, entrepreneurs and innovation, that I don't really see them as separate at all.
Entrepreneurs are strategic thinkers.
I completely agree with that as well. I mean, again, this is kind of related to the innovation part as well, but strategy or actually execution is very important. I mean, you can have the same idea. You can have the old iPods, and there were before iPods, there were a lot of other kind of devices that could, you know, play MP3 files and play music. But, you know, it's like the strategy for Apple was to, you know, just integrate, have a complete like integrated environment with the iTunes and their Apple Store and the iPods and iPhones later. So it's like, you know, you have to have some sort of a strategy, a clear strategy, or how you're gonna execute this. So, and that's absolutely critical. So, yes, completely agree with that statement as well.
Let's move into a slightly different area now, if I can, with you, Armin. And this one is about the use of mentors. I've had some very different perspectives on this, from not at all important to extremely important. So, what role, if any, did mentoring play for you?
It's absolutely like the most important thing in, I would say, in my professional life. So both in terms of me having mentors and role models, as well as me trying to be a mentor or a role model wherever I can. I mean, I have a kind of a, maybe it's a strange philosophy, I don't know, maybe you might disagree with this one, but my kind of philosophy in life is that I assume that I am worse than the others, you know, and so any kind of a task, I just think that I'm a hack, I'm an amateur, right? And you know, if you are, depending on what kind of person you are, you might get really depressed if you have that kind of attitude. You'll, you know, just sort of have a sad face all the time. There's always someone better than you, you know, you can take any area and there will be a better person than you in that particular area. That's guaranteed, you know. And that's the sort of approach that I've taken. And what that allowed me to do then is to basically look up to people and actually learn. Over time, what happens is like you are seeing this particular person as your role model and you still see them as a role model. I mean, they're so good at this. They like, you know, I have a role model now in Ericsson. He's a fantastic guy in his Bayesian analysis, and he's just absolutely brilliant. The guy is just, he's a genius, you know. And the thing is, over time, what you don't realize is that you've actually become a role model for other people, you know, because you've been learning and you've been kind of looking at how these guys do it, how they learn, how they, you know, think about problems, how they, you know, develop solutions. And you've started adopting that yourself subconsciously. And in the process, you've actually become like an expert without even knowing it. You still consider yourself an amateur, but to other people, you're considered an expert, you know? No, I mean, it's been like that from the beginning, from joining your brother's, you know, team in Melbourne to now, it's been the same. I've been very lucky to actually have these people, you know, in my life. So
That's it's quite a good thing to hear, and a nice thing for, hopefully your colleagues will be listening to this when it gets published and they get some perspectives on you. I have a slightly different thought for myself, and it's only a personal thing that, yeah, look, when I'm in a room with people, I try and be not the first person to speak. I like to let others get the gray matter going and try and listen to what people say. I think you can always learn from a room of people, because you're always going to have that mix of those that are a bit tentative to start speaking to the person or people that think they're the smartest people in the room. And I'm yes. quite happy to let them think that, and I'd sort of sit back and learn from them, because typically those people are very opinionated, and you get some sense straight away of what you've got to work with or the issues that are at hand. And I think that makes for a better professional down the track, because being able to spot these things in the people you're working with, let alone clients, stakeholders and competition, gives you an edge. Because you're not consciously trying to do it. It's just the nature of you being in a room. And I get where you're coming from. I guess what I'm hearing, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that mentoring for you is a very collegiate network thing that you can draw from your networks to do that. I'm the same. In my industry here in commercial seafood industry in Australia, I see my colleagues that are CEOs as a network of not just colleagues, but mentors and people I can throw ideas to that can perform the role of a mentor without having that formally there. So it's exactly. I've never had only once in my career I've had a formal mentor, but everything else has been a very informal process of making yourself available to another person to talk to about things, and vice versa, so that you can be a sounding board for them as well. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to hear that was your experience. And I'm yet to see somebody say there's no value in it, but for some it hasn't been the most important part of their journey as an entrepreneur, and for others it's been quite critical and sort of everything in between. And I guess on probabilities that there will be a continuum of very important to very not important, and sort of everything in between. And that kind of sounds like what you've been through. Exactly. So final question here, and this one, no right or wrong answer, Armin, just a question I like to throw in at the end of the podcast. Are entrepreneurs born or made?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I don't know, because deep down, I believe that people, you know, can learn. Like I've got kids, I've got a boy and a girl, and you know, they're in school, and you know, my boy is not like so, you know, good with maths, for example, in the beginning. But you know, then I started working with him and trying to show him different ways of solving the problems. And then all of a sudden, the teacher came to me out of the blue, and you know, she said he's, you know, got 100% on his test. You know, I was shocked. I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant. You know, I think you can learn to like solve problems and look at different perspectives, which is something that is needed for an entrepreneur. So you can learn this. At the same time, like I've always been a curious person, you know, since I remember, you know, my dad was an electrician, and he had a toolbox, and I would, you know, open up his toolbox, and he had little LEDs, and he had a soldering iron. And, you know, I was like, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and I wanted to, you know, do stuff with it. Like I wanted to connect things to the battery, and, you know, it just, you know, always curious about stuff. So And I think that I was like, you know, basically born with that. There was like some sort of a temperament that I, you know, somehow the DNA kind of conspired to make this, you know, happen. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm like, I'm kind of 50-50 on it. And I mean, I've met people like I have, when you talked about mentoring before, I mentor students, for example. So I'm actually going to have a student over the summer working on this idea, on this project for me. So I thought that was very important that you should always bring sort of students from the school, introduce them to the industry and to these ideas and also mentor them. But I mean, I met students in the past where they didn't have the confidence, you know, to really explore ideas. And until you kind of made them feel that it's okay, you know, you can do this. You're smart. You're at university. You're obviously a smart person. I mean, so you can definitely do stuff, you know, and you don't have to, you know, feel that I'm not good at this programming or I'm not good at, you know, maths or whatever. You know, you'll figure it out. So I'm sort of 50-50. I don't know. There's like, it's like, you know, it helps that if you have this curiosity from the beginning and that you have this kind of, I don't know if it's a gift or whatever, but you know, something in there from the start. But I think you can learn and adapt if you have the right sort of surroundings and the right tools around you. I think you can definitely do that.
And I appreciate that response, and that I guess it bodes well for future people wanting to get into an entrepreneurial or even a leadership space. Is that you've got to give people the opportunity to shine and be comfortable enough to take a risk as far as that goes to do their work. And it's even more, I guess, gratifying to hear that someone like yourself in the role that you've got is prepared to take on students and sort of bring them up, because it's everyone gets an opportunity to shine at some point. And if you can give someone a break in an industry that they're interested in, and I have some idea about the level of competitiveness to get into big players in your sector and in many sectors, that any leg up that you've got to be able to get into the future is something worth pursuing. And it's great to hear that, mate. So look, I appreciate your time. I know it's just starting. It's about, what, 10 in the morning in Stockholm?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I hope everything's cool in your part of the world with COVID-19 and that they're starting to hopefully relax some of the restrictions for you in Stockholm there. Is that what's happening, or are you still under lock and key?
Yeah, I mean, we never had a kind of a strict lockdown here by the government. It wasn't like in other countries. It's been the responsibility has been passed on to people and to the companies. So they have, it's been kind of a self-organized lockdown, so to speak. But you know, there's no cops staying, you know, parked on the street and basically like flagging you down and saying, "Hey, where are you going?" That kind of thing. That's never been there.
No, that was a very different experience over here to over there. I think degree of trust that people over here would just automatically do the right thing. Look, I think 90% of people were cooperative from the start. I think there was just a group of people, and not to try and hang an accusatory finger, but I think people just didn't really get the serious nature of what was happening until people got crook and more people got sick. So, and the fact that you guys are on the doorstep of Italy and other countries in Europe that have had a very big outbreaks can be quite a scary thing. So what I'm trying to say is I hope everything is okay over there, and that whatever the new normal, I hate that phrase, but everyone seems to be using it.
That I hate that.
Whatever
as well,
the new normal is in your industry over there, that it's a good thing, and you can take some advantage of it. So for those listening to the podcast, this has been Eric Perez, your podcast host. Thank you again for joining me. I've been talking to Armin Katovic from Ericsson One, who is the founder of RadioSense. Mate, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Eric, and thank you guys for listening.
Again, thanks everyone for listening, and I'll catch you all in the next podcast.